Good morning again. Thank you for obliging the changes in the agenda as actually as necessary. And so before I get started with public comment, I just want to show you the bag that I requested yesterday from PTK in case anyone wanted to take one. They're back on that table for your taking and filling. I gladly owe that to my students. Our students. All right. So we will begin with agenda item number 16, which is public comment. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? And I will be keeping a very tight time clock of 2 minutes per speaker. And if you will please say your name and spell your last name and watch your clock where you are. I really don't like to be the clock police, but I'm going to need to do that today. Thank you so much. And if you have more than a couple in Las Vegas or Reno and in Elko, please line up so that you can just immediately get to the mic. It'll save us a few minutes. All right, please go ahead. They're in Las Vegas.
Good morning, Chair McAdoo and Regents. I'm Bill Robinson, R-O-B-I-N-S-O-N. I've communicated with all of you concerning the item 19, the Nevada State College name change. Just to be clear again, I love NSC. I was involved in the planning of NSC. I've been in the system for 43 years. I continue to work with NSC. We're going to the Henderson Planning Commission together next week. I live next door to them to try to deal with traffic issues. I love NSC, but number one, the campus, their mission is about teacher education and nursing education. That's where they were founded. Those are the two biggest problems facing the state right now, in my opinion, is lack of healthcare professionals and lack of teachers. And they should be the sharp end of the spear on that. And we shouldn't let anything distract them from helping us build the best programs we can there that we do, and that worries me. Number two, if we know the history, when we founded NSC, the legislature just took $19 million from UNLV to fund the founding of NSC. Until the regents are positive of what the budget implications of this are going to be going forward and how that plays, I think we need to be extraordinarily careful. The study that was used to found NSC that documented the need for that school also warned the regents repeatedly about the problems with mission creep that could result. If NSC becomes NSU, Great Basin will be back here the next month wanting to be a state college. If they become a state college, CSN is going to be coming back here to become a state college because that increment brings lots of funding, brings them money. We're going to end up with 8 universities 15 years from now and UNLV and UNR funding them. The real reason to change this name seems to be about the fact that it's common around the country right now, but the states that have done that, there's a lot of competition for their state colleges. There's no competition for NSC. It doesn't face a bunch of small private schools that are competing against it. It's a unique entity, and we should be rewarding it for being that unique entity. And then finally,
organization. But you have zero time left. Per my clock.
Sorry, thanks.
I appreciate your comments. Thank you. Next, please. 2 minutes goes fast. We're aware of that.
For the record, Shannon Smith, S-M-I-T-H. I am the secretary for Nevada State College's Black Faculty and Staff Alliance. I am here today to read a statement of support from our officers and members for the proposed name change for Nevada State College to be renamed Nevada State University. As a Hispanic-serving and minority-serving higher education institution, we take our responsibility to change the lives of our students seriously. And if that means changing our name, so our students, which are students of color, first-generation students, immigrants, undocumented students, lifelong learners, career changers, single parents, vets, part-time students, and individuals who believe a bachelor's degree can improve their economic future, can be considered competitive candidates for employment because the employer recognizes our degree was their degree was conferred by a four-year degree granting institution and not a community college, we must change our name. Our name change will not change who we are or our mission, but it will change how we are regarded in the community by its residents and visitors. This name change is a win for our students, alumni, prospective students, and INSHE. It is also a win for the state of Nevada. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hello, Lalicia Henderson Ray, HENDERSON-RAY. For the record, I am a career advisor at Nevada State College representing the Career Services Department. And I stand here today to speak in support of the Nevada State name change. As a career advisor, the main goal is to help students prepare to apply, interview, get an offer for internships, jobs, and other opportunities. That involves a great deal of working with students on professional development and guiding them on building experiences and skills that display them as well-rounded and qualified job candidates when pursuing their career of choice. With that said, statistics indicate that there are additional factors that can influence employer perception of job candidates, such as school reputation. Thus, I am a proponent of the Nevada State name change. It will present a more reputable education history on the job application materials of Nevada State students for years and years to come. I stand here today as a student advocate, and I believe that this name change will enhance the student pride in their attendance and affiliation with Nevada State. In addition, I truly believe that alumni having the opportunity to articulate that they are a graduate of Nevada State University will increase their confidence as they navigate the workforce. Lastly, this name change will enhance the perception of Nevada State students and alumni in the minds of employers and other stakeholders in the community. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good morning, Chair McAdoo and respected INSHE Board of Regents. My name is Suman Randhawa, that's RANDHAWA. Pronouns she, her. As a former student body president of Nevada State Student Alliance at Nevada State College from 2020-2021, a Nevada State alumna, Las Vegas community member, and a parent of two elementary going kiddos, I stand here to emphasize and echo that I'm in full support of Nevada State College's name change to be Nevada State University. So what's in a name? In a society, we make decisions every day based on what we know about a brand. Nevada State College is a brand that is often mistaken with community colleges. With that being said, Nevada State deserves to be recognized as a university, so students aren't overlooking this institution as an option for their academic career success. I will keep it simple and say that it's more accurate representation of the institution, its mission, its growth, and what it offers academically, its culture. And as a former student of Nevada State College, I can say that the support, the education that I received is unmatched. So as I said, as an alum and a former student body president, I can say this proposal has a strong support from not only Nevada State Student Alliance, but the previous Nevada State College President Patterson, current Nevada State College President Pollard, students, alumni, faculty, staff, and community members. I strongly urge that this name change, and again, I'm in full support of it. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Amy McAfee, and that's M-C-A-F-F-E-E. I am an alumnus of Nevada State, and I was actually a graduate in the class of 2021. This means that I started in fall of 2019, spent one full semester at Nevada State, fell in love, had what I call a thunderbolt moment. In the first day, in the first class, I realized that I never wanted to leave. I wanted to be a professor. And so Nevada State helped me to make that recognition. I am now a grad student at UNLV. I have a 4.0. And I'm applying for doctoral programs, and I will be join the professorship. And it's because of Nevada State that I found that journey. So please support making them a university. They are already a university indeed. Make it a fact. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Hello again. For the record, Dr. Marcela Rodriguez-Campo, pronouns she, her, ella, last name R-O-D-R-I-G-U-E-Z-C-A-M-P-O. I am the Director of Community Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at Nevada State College and advisory member on the Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access Council. I am here today to offer support for the name change for Nevada State College to become Nevada State University. I have the honor of working at the most diverse higher education institution in the state of Nevada, Nevada State College. This initiative to change our name is about two primary things, our students and ultimately equity. I myself am a first generation college graduate, immigrant, formerly undocumented person, Pell Grant recipient, and woman of color. The day of my graduation was the first time that I saw my family's name written on something that could never be taken away from us, my education. Much like the students that we serve at Nevada State, college access to higher education is ultimately one of the most effective and significant conduits for social mobility. When students cross the stage, they are altering the trajectories of every person in their family that comes after them. Our current designation as a college impacts our students' ability to access the full range of benefits that a degree confers upon them. This decision, first and foremost, benefits our students. Our students not overwhelmingly support this name change, but will dramatically and tangibly benefit from our institution becoming Nevada State University. And ultimately, 90% of our students who graduate from Nevada State stay to live and work within our state and serve the community that they call home. This name change would enable the diverse students who graduate from our institution to be more competitive on the job market and ultimately set up their families for success. I support this name change, and I believe that it will secure the futures of the students that we serve and strengthen the promise of the economic mobility that higher education claims. Thank you for your time, and please support Nevada State University.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Board of Regents, Acting Chancellor. For the record, Paul Muratkin, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the Vegas Chamber. The Chamber is in full support of the proposed name change for Nevada State. The Chamber's leadership commends the work that Nevada State has done in the last 20 years and the achievements they have achieved for their students, the faculty, and community. That their academic success, student-focused approach, and community engagement has surpassed all the expectations that they have done to achieve this point today. We believe it is a natural step of the progression, and they have made the business case for this next step of the state's college's history. We hope that all the regents will support the students, the faculty, and staff at Nevada State with this proposed item in your meeting later on today. If this item is to be sent to Carson City for action by the legislative body, the Chamber will also be supporting this in Carson City. Thank you very much for your time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alex Gleitman, and I represent the Rural Association Abiding Nevada State College. We are an association of over 1,000 people, and I have a memo that I've spoken to over 200 of our residents. This memo is concerning from concerned property owners abiding Nevada State College property. Dear Regents, we understand that this proposed name change may be a reflection of the growth of the college. As neighbors of the campus, we are concerned about how this increase in size will affect our neighborhood. In particular, we feel that this proposed intrusion of Paradise Hill Drive into our neighborhood will adversely affect our quality of life. Therefore, we respectfully oppose the name change from Nevada State College to Nevada State University. Thank you, Regents, and that concludes my statement.
Thank you.
I will also...
Oh, please go ahead.
That concludes my statement. I will make an individual statement on behalf of a resident. Good morning, Regents. My name is Alex Gleitman. I live at 836 Santa Ynez Avenue. My property is abiding to the Nevada State College. As a refugee from a former Soviet Republic, as a father, as a husband, as a business owner, I'd like to point you out to a fact sheet from Nevada State College. This information can be found from Nevada State College website. I'd like a greater accountability and oversight to the line item, specifically to School of Nursing. I see a significant drop in the rate of change from students from 2021, from 1,569 to forecasted in 2023 to 774 students. I believe this institution needs to be put a little bit of oversight as to how they represent themselves in the community with their full-time 285 students. And we understand that they represent themselves as 7,200 students that currently come and going out of that college.
Sir.
I'd like to bring that.
I really appreciate your time. However, your 2 minutes are up, and I appreciate you coming from the neighborhood and speaking to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, please.
Is there any further comment in Las Vegas?
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
All right. And we have public comment here in Elko. Please go ahead.
Good morning and hello, Regents. For the record, my name is Tessa Espinosa. I am an undergraduate student at Nevada State College and a Nevada Student Alliance member. This discussion of name change has been brought up since I was a freshman senator, unaware that this conversation will continue to pass through three more Nevada State Student Alliance presidents. I'm here to represent the constituents from my school of diverse backgrounds and cultures who felt even more pride and joy in their institution when I discussed the idea of Nevada State College to Nevada State University. Now, looking back at the first meeting at UNR when you came to NSA's meeting and highlighted the importance of being in our shoes. As a representation of yourself, my peers and I should not have to ask for permission to use Nevada State University. As a first-generation Hispanic woman, the last thing I need to validate is my education. Supporting business item 19A would open doors for students at our institution. Please provide them an opportunity you would have given yourself if you had the chance. Thank you so much and have a good day.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Chancellors, and members of the board. For the record, my name is Amaya Henley, AmiyahHenly. I am a Nevada State College student and a member of the Nevada State Student Alliance as Executive Vice President. Today, my public comment pertains to supporting today's agenda business item number 19A, renaming NSE. As a future teacher of color, I already have one barrier when it comes to applying for jobs. My resume stating that I attended Nevada State College should not be an additional barrier to employment, as my employer might assume I am holding an associate's and not a bachelor's degree. According to the research, students search for the name university when choosing where they wish to study after high school. A name change from college to university can yield more admissions for our institution, and after 20 years, it's time for some change. I would also like to bring to your attention that Nevada is still number 46 in the nation in terms of college attendance rates. Less than a quarter of adults hold a bachelor's degree or more. As an education major, this is demoralizing, knowing people are avoiding college because of whatever's holding them back, whether that be money issues, family responsibilities, etc. Because I know Nevada State can be an option for them, especially since we serve our Scorpion family and we help them succeed no matter what. We are a university that welcomes everyone, a university for all. Whether that be a traditional student fresh out of high school, a non-traditional student looking to change their career path, a first-generation student who will be the first member of their family to have the opportunity to hold a degree that cannot be taken from them, a commuter student who are traveling 40 minutes or more, or a person like me who identifies as African-American and breaking the stereotype that we are, in fact, educated. I recently changed my last name also, and my culture is the same, and Nevada State plans to do the same thing. Thank you for your time, and I ask you to support business item number 19A, renaming NSE.
Thank you. And I've just been made aware that if, unless you're speaking really closely into the mic, the people virtually are having a hard time hearing. So please draw close to the mic. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Hello, Regents. For the record, my name is Dayton, Dayton, Vasquez, Vasquez. I am a student at Nevada State College, as well as the Executive Secretary for Nevada State Student Alliance, which is a student body government for Nevada State College. The public comment I have today is regarding Nevada State College name change and my support for that name change. As some of you may have noticed, I celebrated my 20th birthday yesterday. And within those 20 years, I have learned and experienced so much, I can't even imagine. And just like me, Nevada State College also turned 20 years old last week. And within those 20 years, it is very clear in the ways that the school has grown and learned and with their focus on their students. As a student, I am passionate about this name change. What this name change would mean for me is that I can graduate and have a higher chance of pursuing that career that I want to pursue with the name of university attached. This name change would not only, but would also make a name for me and my family, a family that did not have the chance to graduate high school within those 4 years. Having my name, my family's name, on a university degree not only means the world to them, but it means the world to me as a student. This name change from college and university is important for our amazing alumni, our current and future students, and our staff and faculty. This name change would serve justice for our alumni, as the term university would look more favorable to employers. For our current and future students, this name change would support them in pursuing the future careers after graduation for adding university to their resumes. This will also pay respect to the bachelor and master's degrees we offer while at the same time appreciating and recognizing the staff and faculty that are involved. Nevada State will not only be a university for all, it will be a university for the new majority. I thank you all for your time and urge you to support Agenda Item 19A, renaming NSC. Thank you.
Thank you, Dayton. Next, please.
Good morning, Regents. For the record, Kevin Osorio Hernandez, Osorio Hernandez. I am a first-generation student at Nevada State College and a senator in the Nevada State Student Alliance. I stand before you today in support of Agenda Item 19A, the renaming of Nevada State College. I want to use this time to address two main points that merit emphasizing as you consider your vote in this issue. Let me tell you a story about myself and others with similar narratives within my institution. I was born and raised in Las Vegas, Nevada. My parents immigrated from Guatemala to Las Vegas for a better life. In Guatemala, my mother could only afford a middle school education, and my father only a high school education. My mother always tells me about her dreams of being a teacher and her passion of learning. But because of poverty, her dreams were crushed and turned into a fantasy. But there is power within me because I am the living and breathing aspiration of my mother to achieve the success she has always dreamt of. I am the first in my family to pursue a bachelor's degree. And I am the first to make a change, and I am first and fierce. Receiving my degree from Nevada State University will give honor to my mother's dream by having my family's last name on a university degree. My life is meant to serve Nevadans and to give a voice to those who have no voice. I want to be the representation of el orgullo hispano that I do not see on this board. Receiving my degree from Nevada State University will open more opportunities for me to be in positions of power where one day I can be sitting in your exact seat. Regents, let's not forget, though, that with power comes responsibility, and true power lies within your constituents. Please vote in support of Agenda Item 19A, and please don't let my dreams turn into a fantasy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hello again, esteemed Regents. My name is Yvette Machado Tanier, M-A-C-H-A-D-O-T-U-I-N-I-E-R, and my pronouns are she, her, and Aya. I, like others, come before you representing so many important parts of our great state. I'm a first-generation college student, daughter of migrants, an indigenous Latina, mother of three, Pell Grant recipient, product of CCSD, and a proud student body president of the College of Southern Nevada. And while the diversity that I represent matters a great deal, I come to this board less on our differences and more on our commonalities. I come before you as a proud Nevadan who loves my state and the people who grow here. Our state is known as an industry leader in so many areas, but one thing we cannot use as our claim to fame is our education system. But I genuinely believe that is why we are all here, because we want to help. As a product of Nevada schools, as someone who's looking where to finish my undergrad, As a mother of children in Nevada schools, I've taken notice of the unique successes that Nevada State has made in our community. Despite our school system's shortcomings, despite ethnic and socioeconomic systemic issues, just this morning I was given great advice by wise members of this board to approach this board with solutions when addressing problems. So I'm doing just that. I recognize Nevada State as a direct pipeline solution into filling the deficits in Nevada schools by educating quality teachers, counselors, and staff that come from and stay in our state. Our higher education students who become educators or nurses deserve the accolades that are fitting to the academic achievements they've dedicated to for themselves and for our community. Our K through 12 kids deserve teachers who can inspire them with stories of their degrees from their Nevada State University. A renaming of Nevada State College to Nevada State University can be the measure that translates the potential of Nevada as an academic state for Nevadans, and it will reflect what you as our regents think of the communities, students, and Nevadans that this institution serves. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good morning, Regents. Acting Chancellor Anthony Ruiz with Nevada State College. The number one question that I've received in regards to the name change proposal to university is, who supports this? So I'd like to read in, for the record, a group of individuals that have asked me to do so. And this is in addition to the 1,500 individuals that we've received that have signed a petition online in just the last 11 days. And these are folks, again, that are ready to stand with you, assuming support. First is the City of Henderson, the City of North Las Vegas, the Nevada State Foundation, Nevada State Student Alliance, Nevada State Classified Employee Council, the Nevada State Black Faculty and Staff Alliance, Latin Chamber of Commerce, Nevada, Henderson Chamber of Commerce, the Vegas Chamber, Nevada AAPI Chamber of Commerce, the Urban Chamber of Commerce, the Reno Sparks Chamber of Commerce, the LVGA 50 Board of Directors passed a resolution unanimously, the Consulate of Mexico, Henderson Hospital, U.S. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, U.S. Senator Jackie Rosen, Congresswoman Susie Lee, Congressman Stephen Horsford, Congresswoman Dina Titus, State Senator Roberta Lang, State Senator Marilyn Dondero Loop, State Senator Pat Spearman, State Senator Dina Neal, State Senator Dallas Harris, Assemblywoman Cecilia Gonzalez, Assemblywoman Melissa Hardy, Assemblywoman Danielle Monroe Monreno, Assemblywoman Chandra Summers Armstrong, Assemblywoman Brittany Miller, Assemblyman Cameron Miller, Assemblyman Howard Watts, Assemblywoman Claire Thomas, Assemblyman Edgar Flores, Assemblyman Glenn Levitt, Clark County Commission Vice Chairman Justin Jones, former State Senator Joyce Woodhouse, former U.S. Congressman John Porter, former State Senator Warren Hardy, Felicia Ortiz, Chair, Nevada State Board of Education, Irene Cepeda, President, Clark County School Board of Trustees, Evelyn Garcia Morales, Vice President, Clark County Board of Trustees.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Regents, and Chancellor. Amber Lopez Lassiter, Chief of Staff and Strategy, Nevada State College. We know by far our dynamic students make the strongest case, but we did have some additional folks that wanted to be noted in public record for their support. Those include Deborah March, Mayor of City of Henderson, Michelle Romero, Councilwoman, Mayor-elect, City of Henderson, Dan Stewart, Councilman, City of Henderson, John Mars, Councilman, City of Henderson, Dan Shaw, Councilman, City of Henderson, John Lee, Mayor, City of North Las Vegas, Isaac Barone, Councilman, City of North Las Vegas, Pamela Goines Brown, Councilwoman, City of North Las Vegas, Scott Black, Councilman, City of North Las Vegas, Richard Churchio, Councilman, City of North Las Vegas, Ann Silver, CEO, Reno and Sparks Chamber of Commerce, Chris Porter Jr., Executive Vice President, the Porter Group, LLC, Poonam Mather, Civic and Community Leader, Education Advocate, Wesley Harper, Executive Director, the Nevada League of Cities and Municipalities, and we did also, of course, hear from Bart Patterson, Peter Guzman, Glenn Christensen, Hannah Brown, Ken Evans, Bill Marion, and Scott Mulrath yesterday. We do also have some specific letters of support that have been submitted for public record as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, Regents, and Acting Chancellor. My name is Erin Keller, and I have been an employee of the Nevada System of Higher Education for 14 years, the last five at Nevada State. For our 20th anniversary, we opened a time capsule on campus that had an acting document from where we started. And in that, it wasn't surprising for me at all to see our mission statement that we have not deviated. Our mission statement then and now is to have four-year degrees and some master degrees to help the economic development of our state. But like Regent Moran said yesterday, and I paraphrase, we aren't living like how we did in the past. We're living in the now, and it's time to look forward. This name change allows Nevada State to have our name match our mission, and it allows us to move forward with that economic mobility for the residents of this state and beyond. We conducted surveys to hundreds of people regarding this name change, and the most telling statistic was the name Nevada State University meant more people wanted to apply and go to college. More enrollment for us helps everyone in this room. Our constituents want that naming to happen. You just heard a whole bunch of it. We have 1,500 people who've written in support for us in this last 10 days. And this board has changed names before. This is not something different. We can make this happen for our students, which is the most important part. Finally, yesterday, our acting chancellor, talking about our budget, I'll paraphrase the quote again. We don't want others talking about us. We don't want others talking for us. Today, you have the chance to make sure no one else is talking for you. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next, please.
I guess I'm last. Good morning.
No, you're not last, but it's okay to think that.
Good morning. My name is Nick Claus, C-L-A-U-S. I am the Marketing and Communications Manager at Nevada State College, and I am here to show my support for the name change to Nevada State University. Based on my role, you might assume the obvious reason I would support this change is I'm a marketing guy, and we've definitely got some brand confusion in our region between Nevada State College and College of Southern Nevada. But there's much more important issue to me, and it's one that has been raised by our students and our alumni. When I first heard of Nevada State College, like many, I assumed it was a community college, that it operated in the same realm as the College of Southern Nevada. That was based on my own journey through the Nevada system of higher education. I graduated high school just over the hill in Spring Creek, Nevada. I started my higher education journey here at Great Basin College, and I knew that if I wanted to attain a bachelor's degree, I would have to transfer to a four-year institution to attain that. So after some time at Great Basin College, I transferred to Truckee Meadows Community College, and finally on to the University of Nevada, Reno, where I earned my bachelor's degree from the Reynolds School of Journalism there. Now, my background is not too dissimilar from that of the students that Nevada State serves. I'm first generation, I come from an extremely low income household, and attending community college before transferring to a four-year institution to attain my bachelor's degree was absolutely necessary. The difference, though, between me and our students is that 77% of the students that Nevada State serves come from culturally diverse backgrounds. It seems entirely unfair to me that when our students, those students, leave Nevada State when they graduate and go out into the workforce, and they start having conversations with employers and peers, that they oftentimes find themselves needing to define and sometimes defend the institution where they earned their bachelor's or master's degree. And that is purely based on the difference in perception between the word university and college. They mean two different things in the real world, and they also mean two different things in our state. I also have complete faith in our leadership when they say this is a name change only that will not affect our teaching mission nor our tuition, and that we will continue to operate as an affordable alternative to the R1 research universities in our state. Thank you. Sorry, I'm nervous.
Thank you. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, and I hope I can keep this to 2 minutes.
You will have to.
I know.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Wendy Charlebois, and I'd like to speak to Agenda Item 15, the ongoing research for the consolidation of services between GBC and UNR. I'm an alumnus of UNR, and I am a retired State of Nevada employee of 30 years, including my 11 years teaching social work at GBC, and I'm currently a part-time instructor for UNR in the MSW program. and I sit on the board of Zero Suicide Elko County. The discussion of collaboration of programs that already occur at GBC was addressed, and I want to mention that the UNR GBC 3+1 social work program began in about 2002, and it allowed students in rural Nevada to complete their education, a long-term dream of becoming social workers in this program, because of the incentive of the first 3 years of their curriculum being taken at GBC at GBC tuition rates, really allowed students to fulfill their dreams. This program and others like it are so important right now because we have a severe shortage of mental health professionals in rural Nevada, as it is in 60% of rural counties in the United States. I went to a Zero Suicide Elko County meeting yesterday and found out there were 168 patients admitted to the emergency room in our small emergency room for suicidal ideation, and we had two suicides in Elko last month. As you can see, we need more mental health providers, and programs like this, the 3+1 program and others like it, are so important to our communities that I really want to encourage that when this research takes place, that these programs are given a lot of thought, and that UNR and GBC look for ways to incentivize students to become social workers and recruit more social workers.
Thank you,
students,
Wendy.
Who want to become social workers. Thank you.
And I sincerely thank you for all your service.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I see no more public comment in Elko. So with the agenda changes that I mentioned, we will now move past agenda item 14 and 17, and we will move on to agenda item number 18, and that will be the strategic...
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
This is Regent McMichael. We have one speaker here in Las Vegas.
Okay. I just want to double check that I can go back to that. Okay. I will take that one public comment speaker in Las Vegas. Please go ahead, and you will have 2 minutes. State your name and spell your last name, please.
Thank you, ma'am, for allowing me to finish my 2 minutes of interrupted time.
Oh, sir, I can't give you two more minutes. I only gave you the 2 minutes.
I didn't realize so
let
many,
me check with
politicians.
Legal. Just 1 moment, please.
He's already... You're correct, ma'am.
I would love to have been able to give you those 2 minutes, but I just can't because I can't offer it to everyone else that already spoke. But thank you. I appreciate you coming. Thank you. All right. So we will now move to agenda item number 18. For the strategic plan addendum for Nevada State College, and President Pollard, welcome to the mic. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Chancellor, and members of the board. I'm delighted to be here today to speak to you briefly on an addendum to the Nevada State College strategic plan. And in this, I've had the privilege of speaking to several of you about this, so please feel free to ask questions or pose them along the way. And want to jump right in to tell you these are the topics. I'll share with you how and why this was created, why we think it's essential, and what the next steps are in this process. Important to this, when a new president steps into an organization, you oftentimes see organizations grow through a process of just developing a new strategic plan. I did not think that was necessary when I arrived at Nevada State for two very important reasons. One, there was a new strategic plan that had been put in place that I felt was very strong And more importantly, we were in the midst of COVID. While I was still off, or we still are, it did not make sense at that time to revisit a strategic plan. But yet and still, we did not have the luxury of ignoring this moment that we're in, both in terms of a new leader, but also in terms of the environment that rapidly changed around us. So we developed what we hope to be an addendum that lays in within the strategic plan, and gathered a series of information sessions to gather perspective about Nevada State. Important to that, think about our evolving educational mission and philosophy, and how do we plan for the future. Very simply, as we heard even yesterday in your presentation by our risk management group, it is important that higher education be called upon to be more nimble, more resilient, and more innovative as we try to respond to, and dare I say, live up to the needs of the very diverse community that we have the privilege of serving. You are not immune to what we already know to be our mission and vision at Nevada State. I won't read that to you, but what I will tell you, what this moment has taught us, is that we need to continue to be more deliberate in how we actualize that and what makes us distinctive, what is indeed our value add as an institution within the NC higher education system. And as a result of that, our purpose statement, which you've seen a couple of times now, speaks to this. This idea that we boldly and intentionally embrace our role as serving the new majority. There are false narratives and tropes about who attends higher education right now. They tend to look like a lot of folks who are not at Nevada State. But our students are first generation. They're adult learners. They're students of colors. They're dreamers. They're immigrants. They're anyone who is trying to improve their economic mobility, because we know that if we do this well, we are indeed benefiting all of Nevada. And we also recognize our distinctive competencies institution is around great teaching, transformative student experiences, empowering our employees because they are the secret sauce of Nevada State, and creating strategic alliances. We believe that if we do this well, we are making the audacious bet on the future of education in Nevada by Nevadans and for Nevadans, and all the responsibilities that come with that. So when I stepped into this space, I looked at this phenomenal strategic plan and thought, how do we then build into this? How do we define and amplify and embrace our role as a teaching university within Nevada? How do we continue to look at our role in serving the new majority? How do we design and construct as we move from our teenage years into our young adult years as an institution? How do we continue to be an employee of choice, which is going to be necessary? And how do we continue to advance the middle class, which we know is essential for economic mobility? And it's about this institution, and it's about this state. So you will see that we layer these ideas together in such a way that if we define and amplify our role and our mission, that we have the ability of supporting the new majority and guiding, hopefully, the next normal. As a result of that, you'll see a series of action steps that we are laying into the strategic plan that currently already exist, recognizing that we needed to have workforce responsive majors, that we need to be very thoughtful about how we visualize and show up in the communities that we serve. How do we live up to, the statewide mission that we have at Nevada State? How we continue to think about our infrastructure, expanding graduation rates, addressing mental health that we've heard about multiple times in this month's meeting, being very deliberate about how we construct and design the educational experience. There are many things that I am not a professional and expert at, but what I am one is in higher education and how we design organizations. And as a result of that, the infrastructure of the organization becomes important, from both scheduling and enrollment management to how we look at building pathways from our exceptional community colleges in the state to Nevada State, and think about how, as my friend Keith often talks about, Summer Bridge as a way of really expanding the capacity and awareness of higher education. Important to us, again, financial aid.
our students at Nevada State are probably some of the most price-conscious and vulnerable students that exist within the system of higher education. So how do we create spaces that rise up to meet them? How do we acquire additional funding that is essential to them? How do we make sure that the resources that we provide to them help them understand how they can access their role within the American dream? And if we do this very well, we also have to design new structures around this. So important to us, we know that culture and planning are essential to Nevada State. So I reorganize, and you see that as reflected in this addendum. And then last but not least, we know that we are a part of a community of which we're honored and proud to serve. So how do we make sure that we advance and continue to expand our impact in the community that we have the privilege of serving? So this addendum to the strategic plan, because as Vice Chancellor Abba always says, how do you integrate and ensure that the institutional plans align with the NCHE plan? This is important to us because we recognize the potency of the system. So you'll see that our strategic themes align directly with the themes of the NCHE strategic plan. And in fact, because I have a whole lot of people who like to make graphics and are much smarter than me, they put together an image to help show that we have not only our core themes and the NCHE strategic goals, we also have then our strategic goals and key indicators that speak to that for each of the pillars as well. We will continue to update our metrics in your portal. Board members and members of the staff, you can click on that link right at the bottom. It takes you to our active Tableau website where you can see where exactly we are in the dashboard and meeting the goals that have been identified and the metrics that we have been called to respond to. And again, the next steps in this. We're continuing to implement our FY23 organizational restructuring. We will start the implementation of this plan, including also our campus safety plan. We are in the midst of our mid-cycle accreditation review, which takes place in October. And then very important to that, how do our facilities master plans align with this? It's my intentionality to bring that to you in December. And then last but not least, because one should always be in a state of strategic planning, is to then start thinking about the construct of our next strategic plan so that it is indeed a living entity. I encourage your feedback as we continue to do this work, but we also ask members of our college community to do so, to our culture planning and policy team. They're doing a phenomenal job at helping us make sure that our strategic plan remains a living plan, but certainly speaks to the aims and needs of the system, our community, and certainly the students we have the honor of serving. With that, I'm happy to take any questions, Madam Chair, from the board regarding this addendum to our strategic plan.
I have Regent McMichael in the queue. Regent McMichael, please go ahead.
I put in a motion to approve.
Okay, I have a motion on the floor to approve the strategic plan. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a second from Vice Chair Carvalho. Are there any questions or discussion or comments?
Yeah.
Regent Tarkanian, do you have a comment?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, just wanted to check.
I just wanted to tell you, I just wanted to add, I went to Fresno State College and got my bachelor's there. Someone else talking.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any
other? And we were called Fresno State. There's other talking coming in as I'm going to stop because when I, did someone else stop? Anyway, I just wanted to say I graduated with a bachelor's from Fresno State College, and we worked for years to become Fresno State University. And all that time, you know, we were sort of looked down at because we were college, not university. And I took classes at UCLA at the same time, and they were easier than the classes I took at Fresno State. So I understand very well how the students and faculty feel, and I certainly approve this.
All right. Thank you for those comments, and I believe those actually will apply to the next agenda item, number 19, but they're both Nevada State items, so we will keep those comments pertinent to the next agenda item, but thank you for sharing those. Do I have any other comments or questions about agenda item number 18, the strategic plan? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
We will now move to agenda item number 19, the renaming of Nevada State College. President Pollard, thank you for staying at the mic.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, again, Darian Pollard, the proud president of Nevada State College. Let me talk to you about what I believe to be a necessary act, not only for the students we have the privilege of serving at Nevada State, but dare I say, the state of Nevada. To be clear, in every sense of the word, Nevada State has been a university for years. We're the only primarily four-year institution in the state of Nevada still using college to represent our mission. And we believe that changing the name from college to university is part of a natural progression that better reflects Nevada State as the youngest and most diverse and fastest growing institution in the state. And for the last 20 years, we have grown from serving a few students to 7,200 students, offering a master's degree and graduating our largest class ever just this past year. This is important because we know that Southern Nevada continues to abide in one of the lowest quartiles, if not less than that, of adults who have earned a baccalaureate degree. Less than a quarter of adults hold a bachelor's degree or more, and the Southern Nevada region, though, has continued to grow exponentially. We believe that transitioning and renaming Nevada State allows us to better position ourselves in the marketplace, but also better positions this region as it relates to talent development and workforce development. We know that higher education is essential for economic development in this state. And we know that persistent inequities in race and income continue to leave some students behind. You heard my students. There are thousands of those stories each and every day. And we believe that this gives us an opportunity to represent the value of this institution and importantly represent the value of the students who graduate from Nevada State. We know that we were intended and we serve the new majority. And what I know for sure is that the only thing that can transform and transport a family from poverty is education. It is my story. It is the story of hundreds of people who have spoken recently about Nevada State, but it is also the story of many of the folks that you heard in this space. Our goal, we believe, is to act with intention, to design, redesign, and reinvent our campus, to break down historic barriers that prevent learning. And we have been successful thus far in doing that. We believe in great teaching, transformative student experiences, empowering our students, and creating strategic alliances. You've seen this purpose statement before, just in my last presentation, and I bring it up again because that is at the root of what we are trying to present and why this renaming is so important. So let me put this out here. A few of y'all know I'm just a little black girl from the south side of Chicago. I don't have a lot of patience for inaccuracies.
So let me be very clear about what our truth is in this moment. We have no aspiration to become a research institution in this state. In fact, there are two phenomenal ones here that I have the privilege of working with as a president of your state college. We have an exceptional research institute that is redefining the way we think about research in this country. And we have a superior community college system. We reside in the space in the middle of that. We have no desire to rename Nevada State to obtain land grant status. I read about that fight before I got here. I want no part of it. More importantly, here it has been resolved. We have no intention regarding changing the funding formula to increase tuition or fees. We want to remain being the affordable and accessible option for baccalaureate education and niche master's degrees in this state. Be very clear, that is the only goal that we have in doing this. We don't want to be somebody else. We know exactly who we are. We were created to do important work here. We sit in the middle, we understand the tiered system in Nevada, and we also believe deeply that we have an essential role in how this state shows up as it relates to higher education. And dare I say, there is a necessary time for a new name to speak to the future of this state. Across the nation, the college designation has been transforming, and it does not represent, we believe, the breadth and depth of the programs of study and the degrees that we offer at Nevada State. We believe that this is consistent with our programming, and we believe that it fits both the present and future of Nevada State education. Between 2001 and 2016, 122 four-year institutions in this country changed their name from college to university. In a peer-reviewed journal, they talked about the rationale for that. And what they found is that colleges that changed their name experienced a 5.2% increase in students within 5 years and a 7.2% after 6 years. This is not about just Nevada State. This is about the state of Nevada. If we want to have more adults and young people seeing college as an option, I think we have to think about how they see us when we step into their spaces. Less than 1% of public schools within Nevada State's Carnegie classification in the Western United States use the word college. Among our AskU peers, only one other school in the Western United States still uses college. That's Lewis Clark State College and Nevada State. An important note to be made that regionalism is an important thing. You all know I came here from the East Coast. College has a very specific name there. You see the rise and continued growth of a number of small liberal arts institutions that primarily use that term. That is not a term that right now is allowed and necessarily seen, per se, in higher education beyond the East Coast or west of the Mississippi. So for us, this is about adding value and valuation to higher education and validation of what we do. You all have heard this already, and this is part of the risk survey that you heard earlier. Students continue to question the cost of higher education. And we believe that changing our name underscores the value that we bring to our students and hopefully what they can bring to all Nevadans. In the last 20 years, we've grown to 7,200 students, offering a master's degree and graduating our largest class ever this past year. And we are now certainly not at the levels of my colleagues, in many cases with alumni, but we're growing. And here's the beautiful part, and I love one of the students who said it earlier, 80% of the graduates of Nevada State stay in the region. That's a critical point about how we think about higher education here. And we also know that many of our students come to us because they know that financial aid is important. That is their biggest worry, the idea of debt. So for us, if we could think about how we can use a credential to help them not only explain and make the decisions around the tuition choices that they make, but also that they're able to see that there's a value after that. 67% of Nevada State students agree that a degree from a university is more valuable than a college degree. Simply in words, terminology meant something to them. The history on this is not opaque. We know that Nevada State has existed for 20 years. And we've been doing this work, working alongside the fabulous institutions that already abide in this state. But it's also important to remember that 6 of the 8 Enchi institutions have changed their name one time or more. And the Board of Regents has done that because you recognize and heard, maybe not the regents who are here today, but there is a rationale for how and why it was done then. And it should not be omitted from the fact that the regents themselves did this. Community College of Southern Nevada and Western Nevada Community College changed their names in 2007, removing Community College and taking on the college-only designation. The marketplace has changed, and they adapted in a way that was necessary for the markets that they serve. But I would offer to you that change oftentimes create cognitive dissonance. And we hear this from our students who are transferring to our institution. Not because they say that where they have earned their associate's degree or where they're bringing credits from is not important, but the idea of the shift mentally is something that they need better explanation for. In fact, when I arrived here, I actually said this one time to my good friend Frederico. I said, well, people keep asking me, have I replaced Frederico? And I said, no. I said, Dr. Z is right there. He is my hero. Because 33% of Henderson businesses and community leaders surveyed that they didn't know the difference between Nevada State College and the College of Southern Nevada. We coexist in the same microcosm, and they couldn't remember or understand what the difference was. Our hope is to make that clearer for our students, for our community members. And we also know that if we continue to do this now is important before we continue to grow as we're projected to grow at Nevada State. We want to plant the seeds now in such a way that it would be beneficial in the future. A name change does not mean a change in mission. The purpose is to differentiate our existing mission. Again, we don't want to be something we're not. We're not trying to take away anybody else's space. In fact, we want to abide more fully and deliberately in the space that we are in. We believe that we have strategies to make this very cost effective. And talking with some of the regents when I first brought this up to you, end of last year, I've been very clear that we will not be using operational dollars for this. In fact, based on technology, most of this is a computer keystroke change. It is not something that will require that, but in fact, whatever dollars are necessary to do this, I will publicly raise, privately raise in order to do that. Let me end and bring this to a close by talking about our students. You all have heard our students talk about the benefit of having their name on a credential that reflects the lived experience that they've had at Nevada State, but also that will have the value in the marketplace. The same study from the Journal of Economics talked about students experiencing increases in earnings annually simply by the conversion of a name change from college to university. We also know that for us, and I've said this time and time again, this name change is about economic competitiveness and it's about equity. Our students believe and support this, and the campus community, our faculty and staff, express that. We know that we want to have more yield rate and, again, have more college-age students attending college. And if a name change is something that attracts them to our organization, I like that as well. But it's also important as we have more and more students who come to us from other countries, because oftentimes college is associated with secondary or high school education rather than higher education. And we want to be a viable option for them as well. So this university for all is an important thing for us. Nevada as a state has no ethnic majority, and this diversity is reflected in the enrollment of Nevada State. 77% of Nevada State students are non-white. Our Hispanic enrollment has surged, and that makes us higher than the state's general population in many ways about our student diversity. I'll also tell you that the majority of our students are first in their family to attend and complete college. And they're paving their way boldly around economic mobility. But what I think is even more provocative about this, when you think about who's going to college, only 2% of Nevada State students of color are considered traditional, meaning if you think about traditionals being first generation entry into college under the age of 25, not first generation and not low income. This trend holds consistent for our white students as well, that only 4% of the white students who attend Nevada State meet a definition that would make them traditionally attending college. So we are state. And I thought long and hard about how I might conclude my comments here today. And I want to think, how could I favorably offer statements to help dispose this body to rename Nevada State? And how could I possibly be more resonant than the voices that have already spoken and offered statements? Regents, Nevada State matters. I'm not naive to the forces that are swirling around us right now. And let's be honest. Let's acknowledge that some of the root sentiments that are at play here are indeed very complex. What should be protected as a necessary and inevitable moment of progress, pride, and maturation for many is seemingly not. What keeps tumbling through my mind is, for whom was Nevada State created? And why is our very existence met with outright contempt in some areas? Perhaps it's because we have the audacity to claim space in a system that was not designed for us. Perhaps it's because we persist, much like some of the bushes that I see in the Nevada desert, that exist even in a moment that baffles and defies because of the environment in which they exist. Regents, Nevada State matters. Some of you have asked me why I'm so urgent about this issue, why I'm unwilling to slow down or wait until some undefined or ambiguous moment in time where things are seemingly more settled. Two reasons fuel me. First, this is not new. It is the evolution of an idea whose time has come. How much longer do we ignore the needs of our students while others get comfortable with the notion of progress and change and evolution? Secondly, and perhaps more important for me, I see myself in these students and the alumni who speak so passionately about Nevada State. I see the challenges awaiting them, and I see the grit and determination that brought them to this moment. How do we dare deny them every asset and opportunity necessary to fairly and thoughtfully compete in today's marketplace? Regents, Nevada State matters. A friend wrote to me a note of encouragement yesterday, lifting up and extolling this momentous decision, to which I replied, Nevada State is unapologetically proud of who we serve and what we do. Regents, your students and alumni, your faculty and staff of Nevada State deserve a name that reflects the mission, teaching, and support
that takes place in this transformational and disruptive organization. Widening participation and success in higher education is our prime directive, and no student, no institution, no degree within this system is expendable. For a year, I've watched us closely talk about our articulated commitments around higher education, around economic mobility, around democracy, and around a stronger nation. I think it's time that we reconcile who we claim to be with who we really are and what we aspire to become. Regents, Nevada State matters. In moments like these, I often ask myself, on what side of history do I want to be on? And 10 times out of 10, I choose to be on the side of my students. That proposition never disappoints or threatens me. It rarely fails to bring me joy and pride, and always affirms for me why I chose this work and the population of students I have the privilege of serving. To be clear, this decision is about the future of the state. It's about economic competitiveness and equity, and it's about doing what's right. Even if our voice and our hands shake, and those who are supposed to be for us go against us. I have found and have found profound confidence that justice and courage more often prevail than limited thinking, deferred dreams, and unexamined prejudice. Indeed, Regents, Nevada State University matters. Thank you, and I'm happy to respond to questions.
I, of course, would like for you to stay at the mic, President
yes,
Pollard. However, because if you, to my fellow regents, if we look at our board pack, we're very aware that this is a two-part agenda item. So I would actually like to call on Chancellor Urquiaga to speak to part B prior to any questions or comments, because I see them, they're linked together. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the board, President Pollard, presidents. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, acting chancellor. So some backstory: when this agenda item came to the board office, you all know how this process works. We have to respond with both a briefing paper approval and review any implications of an agenda item. And we very quickly decided, in consultation with general counsel and the vice chancellors in the system office, that there are implications to the name change. So that is why agenda item 19B appears before you. And President Pollard and I have discussed this at length, so nothing that I'm going to say will surprise her. I greatly appreciate the president's declared intention that nothing will change. And I have said to her, she will not always be president. I certainly will not always be acting chancellor. And this board will not always be this board. And so to ensure that future actors in our system are required to act with attention to the stated intention of this name change, in the opinion of the system office, we have to do some changes in the handbook. It's been said here today that words have power, and it has been said today that Nevada State matters. I will tell you, as a lifelong bureaucrat and frequent attendee at the Nevada legislature, words also matter, and words have power under law that is very different from their normal parlance and the way y'all talk and I talk. And so our code uses specifically the phrase state college in a number of places to mean certain things and certain rights, privileges, and responsibilities appertain to that word or that phrase. For example,
Admission requirements at a state college are different. Tuition at a state college is different. Faculty salaries at a state college are different. That's just in our code. And so we have decided in the system office to act as expeditiously as we can. We could insert in code a definition. When we say state college, we mean Nevada State University. That's sort of the workaround in our own code. I will also tell you, it's a hammer, not a scalpel. That phrase appears in a lot of places, and so I still have a little bit of nervousness about applying a hammer to something that could cause future generations of students to pay more, or could require a lawsuit from a faculty member saying, oh, I actually want to be paid that salary. So I still am a little nervous about the hammer, but we worked as quickly as we could to bring you this solution within our code. It's posted to you today as an informational item, Regents, because as you know better than I, code changes require two hearings. And so this is the first hearing on the code change. We would bring this item back to you at a subsequent meeting, I should think, in December. So that's the code. We felt that was important to as quickly as we could say, indeed, words have power. Indeed, this matters. And here is what we mean. And we always mean that, unless you have to go through a voting process. No end around at some future when someone decides to interpret the phrase their own way. In the same role of trying to safeguard the system and the students and the faculty and staff of both Nevada State and all institutions, those words have power and meaning in state law as well. The state funding formula allocates additional dollars to universities for upper division and graduate courses. It's about a 10% bump in the weight. And so we've already been asked by legislative staff, oh, would this name change change your calculation? Because remember, that calculation is run there, not just here. And so to be responsive to the legislative staff and, frankly, protective of the budgets of all institutions, we are proposing that we define these terms similarly in NRS, in the Nevada Revised Statutes. Similarly, in another chapter, the Governor Gwynn Millennium Scholarship allocates funding by credit type differently across three tiers. And so that we do not set a false expectation for students that, oh, I'm going to a university, so now I get this level of credit. That would be, I think, detrimental, insulting, and very harmful to those students when then their financial aid officer had to say, oh, you're not that kind of university. That's exactly what y'all have been warning us has been happening. And so, again, I'm in this unenviable position of having to be the bureaucratic wet blanket who says words have power under state law. That is different from the way we use them in parlance and is certainly different from the way they are used in higher education generally, as the president has so eloquently described. So my recommendation to the board is that if the board chooses to adopt item 19A, you also adopt item 19B so that we can begin the process of aligning the code and so that I can go to the legislature and ensure that our funding formula and our Millennium Scholarships and any other statutes that we haven't found yet will not be adversely impacted by this operation. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be happy to participate in the discussion if there are questions specific to me versus the President. And thank you, President Pollard.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor. I have Regent Geddes in the queue.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. And thankfully, the Chancellor spoke of most what I was going to speak to. But I'll tell you, when former President Patterson and when I've talked to you, President Pollard, I'm completely supportive of the name change. And I understand you wanting to jump now. And I'm far more cautious than that. And it's not because I have any bad feelings to Nevada State or any preferences to the other institutions. I love Nevada State. I love scorpions. But, you know, when the Rand and Battelle studies were done, it was to create six state universities. And Nevada State was the first one. And it struggled and struggled. And When I came on the board in 06, we did what we could to push it forward, and then we hit the recession. But then it's just taken off, and I'm very, very proud of where it's at and where it's going. But the and I won't be on the board, but I would support it in a future date. But to the chancellor's point, there are a few things, and I don't think you've had the pleasure of going to the Nevada legislature yet. So I heard a lot of support from legislators, but a BDR request does not mean it passes or gets signed by the governor. And without those changes, whatever changes we make won't mean much. And as the chancellor pointed out, you know, the Gwynne Millennium Scholarship, all the other programs that are tied into the code for Nevada State College in 396, if the legislature doesn't change those, anything we do today doesn't matter. And to the point of the handbook, we've got a lot of references in the handbook that we need to clean up. There were only a couple referenced here today, and granted, it's first reading. But there are a lot of them in there, as the chancellor pointed out, tuition and fees, faculty salaries, entrance requirements, where we have it defined by university, state college, community college. And to the name change, it's not simply a name change. We were able to drop community from the colleges, all except TMCC, because they wanted to keep community in their name, because we checked with Northwest Accreditation, and they said there was no mission change. When I checked with Northwest Accreditation on this change, they said it's significant. And it's not just a name change. There is a process that we would have to go through because of their accreditation standards from college to a university. And I know the mission, what you're saying, really doesn't change much. But according to Northwest, it does. And I think we have to get that resolved before we move forward with this. And really, my last point is it was comments you made. I'm not sure where you were going with it, but it was retroactive diplomas. That anybody who graduated from Nevada State College, and honestly, in all the public comment, everybody's very proud of it, and we're proud of it. I would not want to go back and give them a diploma that said Nevada State University, and I'm not even sure if we could. Again, checking with Northwest Accreditation, they're like, nobody's ever asked for that before. So it's always been on a going forward basis. So I can just tell you, and I think you were speaking at me kind of harshly, or not harshly, bluntly and directly, and other members of the board, but I'm slow. I'm a slow mover, and I'm not willing to jump until we get these legal legislative accreditation and handbook issues resolved. So I could not support this.
Thank you. Thank you, Regent Geddes. To be very clear, my intentionality was not speaking directly or bluntly at you. I tend to be blunt and direct, period. And I think there are probably other forces outside of this space, actually, to which I was thinking about. Let me be very clear about a couple of things. We actually did have a conversation with Northwest as well, so I'm happy to maybe reconcile and talk with both populations or both persons that were spoken to understand that. We were told very clearly this is indeed a name change, not a mission change. In fact, we were referenced to other in Northwest Commission institutions that have done the same thing. Most recently, in fact, institutions that changed name and very clearly dropped and went from college to university for this very same purpose. So I think we can work with that fairly easily. I've also made initial conversations with the Department of Education for that very same purpose, again, with the clear understanding that it is indeed a name change. It is not a mission change. Our intentionality by having this start July 1 of next year is to allow for all of the work that you described that needs to be done in terms of our handbook. The chancellor and I had very robust conversations around this topic, and he helped me understand many of that. And that's why we thought the 19 A and B worked well to respond to that. I'm fully prepared. You're correct. I have not lived through the Nevada legislature yet. And I hope that I will live and tell a tale as a result of having done that. But what I will say, I have some expertise or experience navigating legislatures, and I'm very comfortable advocating for the story and the rationale for what we're doing and helping and having students and alumni tell that story. What I think is important is in this board being able to say that they support that and here's why. And I'm willing to do the heavy lifting. And as one of my colleagues pointed out to me, we may not win in that. If it gets to the legislature and they have a different opinion and we're unable to offer and rally a compelling statement and a series of actions to get them to act in some accord in that space, I understand that. But I don't believe, I think the fight you lose first is the one you aren't willing to engage in. And for me, I think it's important for us to think about this in terms of the students that we serve, this mission that's important, and an institution, I think, that is doing the work of a university. And while Nevada has a fairly defined way in how it has these terms understood, there's some broader ones, and there's an opportunity, I think, to do both an education campaign and an awareness campaign about what they mean and why. And to do the last part of what you said very clearly, protect the things that are important to people. This mission, to protect the funding formula and to protect all the things that are direct impact of that.
And
I appreciate your point. I know you've been very clear with me, and I value that. I really do.
And I don't disagree with anything you said. It's just the sequence. I think, especially the Nevada legislature, I think that's got to go first before we hit anything else.
Thank you.
So, because we're talking about the NWCCU, I want to read into the record the letter that we received from them when we asked about what the name change might mean. It sounds as though it's different from what you heard, but I have an imprint here.
That'd be great, and I would love a copy of that. This is the first I've heard that there was a letter that has been received or sought.
Well, so when I look at this, I mean, listen, I heard all the passion, and I love that. And I really want to be able to support that passion. But first of all, I believe I'm obligated to all Nevadans, and I believe Nevada State matters, but I believe our other seven institutions matter equally, the same. It's every student and every institution matters to me. So that is why I had to do some due diligence to be able to reconcile in my mind, because I would love nothing better than just to say I make a motion to approve and vote yes. But I believe the timing, I believe the sequence is backwards, truthfully. So this letter says, and we contacted our NWCCU representative, who was a former regent, Kevin Melcher, but he's been appointed to that board. And so he contacted NWCCU on our behalf so that we could have as objective of a reply as possible. And the response from Sunny, I can't ask him how to pronounce his last name, but it's like Ramaswamy.
Mm-hmm.
It says, good evening, Kevin. Thanks for reaching out to me. We were contacted a few days ago by Tony Shenta, the college's ALO, regarding the process for the institution to undertake. Were they to move forward with the intent to become a university? As my colleague Selena Grace informed Tony, it's not just a simple name change. Rather, per our policy, it is a substantive change because there will be a significant change in the mission of the institution. And part of that right now, I'm assuming, is because of our own code. That isn't in the letter. In the recent past, we have had a few institutions go through a process. Ed Hari, our newest senior vice president, is the new staff liaison to Nevada State College. Selena will work with Ed and the institution to walk them through the process. Finally, I have not heard of institutions retroactively sending transcripts and diplomas with the new names. While there may be no issues with this per se, we will need to, however, look into this, because the alumni attended an institution that was a college. I do not recall any regs that speak to this. We will do some checking on this. When the substantive change proposal comes to us, we will be doing our due diligence. Thanks again for reaching out to me. Stay well. So with that, it says to me the sequence is off, that first of all, we need to look at our own code, maybe have that the first step rather than the part B of this, and then take into account the NWCCU and Nevada State, get answers for us. We probably will get those answers as well. And then we would be able to make an informed decision that isn't going to require us as a board to have to backtrack and maybe make changes then. I would rather us do our due diligence just straight in a row, very sequential. And you've done your due diligence, getting all the support that's from your community members and others. And I appreciate that. But we have a different piece of a due diligence here that I feel we must follow. So at this particular time, I won't be able to support it. But I do plan that at some point I will be able to support it, because we will have all the answers in place. So,
Madam Chair, I really appreciate, thank you for that thoughtful response. I have to admit my level of surprise and somewhat chagrin that this is the way and the format in which I would find this information out. If there had been this concern articulated to me before, I would have happily and gladly provided greater insight based on the conversations we've had. In particular, I'd be very thoughtful about how both the regions that I'm aware of define substantive change. That has, again, a very particular set of language, as you well know, regarding accreditation. And I would also offer that there's a great opportunity for us to work collaboratively to make sure that the question posed speaks to that. I was struck by the phrase in the email that came, or the message you had that said, to become a university. That does actually have very distinctive language in many accrediting regions. That is very different than what I am proposing. That being said, I'm happy to secure some additional information and to certainly collaborate. As you described, the ALO that we had at Nevada State recently changed. So this is an interesting nuance that I find most intriguing.
Thank you for that. As you can imagine, I felt it necessary for us to get that information.
No doubt.
For us to make a decision. And we still have other regions to hear from.
Certainly.
So let's hear from them and what they have to say.
Thank you.
And I know we will come to some type of an agreement today that the board will determine. So let's see. Actually, I have the Nevada Student Alliance Chair, Dion Stanfill, in the queue.
Thank you. Dion Stanfill, Student Body President of the University of Nevada, Reno, and the Nevada Student Alliance Chair for the record. To clarify, I have no official opinion on the name change of Nevada State College, but I'd like to remind this body that both the universities of Nevada, Reno, and Las Vegas are universities for all as well. There were many public comments in regards to Nevada State College asserting that this college will have more pride and more credit with a name change to a university. However, the Nevada State College has a unique identity in itself. It was said themselves that they know exactly who they are. There should be no need to validate your education, and this name change promotes the stigma in attending a community college when a different approach should be to fight the stigma of attending a community college. This name change sets the precedent to change the name of other colleges within the state and is additionally a misleading name to be a land-grant institution. I really want to emphasize that the University of Nevada, Reno, as well as the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, are both universities for all. In fact, UNLV is one of the most ethnically diverse universities in the nation, and UNR has a high Native student population and is overall an accessible, diverse, and opportunistic institution. Of course, I see and understand the arguments provided by the representatives of Nevada State College, and this name change has potential to benefit their institution. But we must not ignore the name change that has potential to hurt other Nevada institutions, both Nevada universities and Nevada colleges. Thank you.
Thank you. Next in the queue, I have Regent Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate that. The student spoke really good right now. I was really going to ask, why was the student speaking? It was not public comment time. It was time for regents to discuss. But what she said was outstanding. I liked it. Now, if you will bear with me, I have written this down. Mostly, I know that, Regent Geddes said he likes scorpions, and I like scorpions, too. Some people gather tadpoles when they're kids, and some people, like Chancellor Keaga, gathered cocoons. I gathered scorpions, and we made them fight. So that was, the Roman gladiator games. As kids, we did that. And we did it till we got stung, and it hurts like HE double hockey sticks. So I'm trying to be politically correct here. Firstly, President Helens and President Sandoval agreed to a momentous move, and I think this would be great for them, the college, Nevada State College, to maybe join UNLV in the same vein of doing things. The university they want, well, I've nothing against it. Let's join UNLV. What's wrong with that? Secondly, the two presidents yesterday, they brought the item to the board before taking the item to the court of public opinion. And I find that really a terrible turnoff when people speak up and try to threaten you about elections and you will be, that really makes me more of a scorpion than anything else. Public opinion is really very important, but not when it comes from politicians and others who are in power and not present to speak up themselves. Thirdly, like Chancellor Keaga mentioned, the legislature would like to know about the funding, not just for now. We might get some private funding now, but President Pollard, when you go, and we'll all go someday, are we sure we'll be getting that same public funding? So I'd really like to put this on the record and say, why not join UNLV? And also, if it's just something that you judge a book by its cover, by a name, that's now maybe people say you judge a CD or whatever they have these days instead of a book by its cover. I think people are proud to have gone to college. And I hear everybody talk about first generation. I'm an immigrant. I am first generation, and I managed to go through UNLV, and I took some classes at community college. So I don't feel like saying this, but I'm going to say it. Don't give me that rubbish when everybody says I'm a first generation immigrant. Me too. I came here. I took the risk. So don't threaten this board like some people have done without knowing it. And I'm not saying that to you, Dr. Pollard. I think you are amazing, and you speak, you're very eloquent, great thoughts. But I'm tired of people coming to this board and threatening us, and we all sit there quietly like sheep. So that was my diatribe today. But I would like to see this college join up with UNLV and get the university name. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. I'm going to allow, or not allow, I'm going to ask our Chief of Staff and Special Counsel to the Board, Robert Kilroy, to answer your question of why I called on our Nevada State Alliance Chairwoman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regent Boylan, often during an agenda item and there's a discussion, it's the prerogative and the discretion of the chair to call on whoever they believe will help educate and provide information for the eventual deliberation of said action items. However, with that said, you are correct in certain regards. When there is a motion in a second, then there is opportunity for debate. And that's when it can be exclusive to the regents. But at this particular point on agenda item 19, the Madam Chair has an open discussion. So it's within her prerogative and discretion to call on whoever she pleases. So thank you, sir.
Thank you, Councilor Kilroy. And Madam Chair, I was not questioning you in not one iota. I was just wanting to know this, and Council has let me know, and I appreciate that. I think that student said what I wanted to say. So thank you to her, and thank you to you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I respond to the other questions the Regent Boylan posed?
Yes. President Pollard is going to respond to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate Regent Boylan's comments for several reasons. I think they help amplify a few things that are at the root of this conversation. First of all, I'm a Scorpio by zodiac sign. So my tendency is to make sure that I don't lash out and sting, because I know that that's not always the intent. That's typically a survival technique. I don't think that this is a survival moment, so I'm going to try and respond thoughtfully to the questions that are posed periodically here. I would offer that UNLV and Nevada State have two very different missions. And to be very clear, I celebrate that mission. It is why the funding formula, the state code, and all of the various apparatus of the state recognize the distinction between the institutions. As a research institution that is about the production of scholarship, as land-grant institutions are asked to do, as a Research One institution, serving the populations that it does, it has different standards of admissions, has different qualifications for its faculty, has different ways of rewarding and tenuring and promoting faculty, has different obligations around a collection of research dollars to do the mission. I'd offer that Nevada State, as the state college of the state, has a very different mission. I believe that trying to merge those institutions would not advance that. I choose to remain silent on the merger or the consolidation or the strategic alliance that's being posed between UNR and Great Basin, because that's not something I know a lot about. And more importantly, it's not my decision to be made. So I don't see those as similar for a couple of reasons. But I do want to be very clear that this is, again, I did not build a public campaign in a way to prevent the regions from talking about this. I believe most of the regions will recall initial conversations with me about this starting last fall, November or December, about 2 months after I started in this role. That continued with me providing a white paper to you that talked about this issue and laid the issue out. It further continued with a series of personal one-on-one conversations with regents that I was able to talk with, who then posed questions to me. And we had rigorous and thoughtful engagement around the issues. So for me, a first coming to the Board of Regents is exactly what I've been trained and know how to do.
And in fact, did not bring this to you in March so that we could have more continued conversation and positioning before I brought it to the board here. But I do believe, as elected officials, they're members of your constituencies who have opinions about this. And just as they advocated around vaccines and as they advocate around any number of different issues that come before you for decision making, they made the same decision to come here. And I also thought it was most appropriate to seek that type of guidance and feedback and support of the work and the decision that you would need to make as regents in regards of Nevada State. I'm hopeful that those two points are clarified. And as for a first-generation college student, I share with you, I hope, Regent Boylan, a recognition that there's grit and determination about how we got here, whether it be the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, whether it be Nevada State College, whether it be Iowa State University, whether it be Loyola University Chicago. All of those were pathways into higher education. But I also know that being first generation means something, because we are a part of a system that was not intended for us to succeed. So the fact, Regent Boylan, that you are a regent in this system says something about who you are and your grit and determination. And I would offer to you that's the same grit and determination that the students who come to my institution, our institution, bring. And I think that deserves to be celebrated and recognized for the journey that it takes to do that work.
Thank you, President.
Madam Paul. Chair?
Yes, Regent Boylan?
Through you to President Pollard, thank you so much. Like I said, you're very eloquent. And when you and I spoke, if you remember, I thought the idea is great. Like a university better than college and all those good things. I had the distinct pleasure to start the first bachelor's program in Homeland Security in this country in a small university that was really a community college, and it was called the University of Vincennes in Indiana. And I enjoyed it. I love colleges and universities, schools, everything. My life has been education in one way or the other. And I do see all the good points that everybody has tried to bring up, but I really do feel that what President Helens and President Sandoval did is something that we could look into deeply, and maybe Mr. Kiaga or Council Kilroy could tell us how that's possible. And that's just my suggestion, that if it's a university you want and people want, we already have one. Let's join them. So I wish you all the best with this, but I'm not in favor of it for all the reasons mentioned above. And I thank you, Dr. Pollard, for your eloquence, your time, and I seem to learn something every time I talk to you, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. I will now go to Regent Brooks in the queue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to make a couple of comments, and you have to excuse any redundancy of things that the Chancellor has spoken about or colleagues have already spoken about. I live in Henderson, and conceptually, I agree with the idea. I think it would be fantastic to have Nevada State University there. But as a regent, I don't know that I've been provided with all the necessary information required to make an informed and responsible decision regarding this agenda item. And I'm additionally confident that if I feel I don't have all the necessary information, Neither do some of my fellow electeds in Henderson and throughout the state who have graciously and passionately come forward to support this agenda item. There is simply no existing process in the state of Nevada in which a higher education institution identifies themselves as something they are not. And I'm concerned that a foregone conclusion has been made regarding this agenda item, and equally concerned with what I would refer to as inconsistent messaging. Now, some of my concerns are probably similar to other regents, but they certainly revolve around accreditation, Millennium Scholarship and Carnegie classification, expectations for faculty salary increases, admission standard changes, possible student fee increases, state budget allocations, unintended consequences, and I have some concerns regarding what I feel is maybe a lack of coordination with the system office and the board in terms of getting very clear with procedural processes that would enable the facilitation of this. Quite frankly, I'm trying to get a handle on all the processes that may be necessary for this to take place, because it's well beyond a simple DBA, and messaging as such, I feel is irresponsible. And while I think it would be wonderful to simply reissue diplomas if there's a designation change, I'm unaware of the administrative authority the college and the system has to reissue degrees and diplomas with a university designation to students who did not graduate from a university. Furthermore, suggesting any college degree is less than may be an insult to institutions who have college in their name. And again, while I agree with the conceptual idea of a Nevada State University in Henderson, there's an existing demographic of adult learners and younger students who seek the education intimacy of a small campus rather than a large institution like UNLV. And Nevada State College currently perfectly fits that state's middle tier system as a resource for those community members. Now, setting all of my concerns aside regarding process and due diligence that I believe should be conducted and presented to the board, and as a way of honoring your intentions, I'm prepared to make a motion to table this until the appropriate processes have been examined, followed, and fulfilled as a way of keeping this agenda item alive rather than conducting a vote today, if Dr. Pollard, you're amenable to that.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Brooks, for the motion, and Regent Geddes for the second. And now that leads us into discussion, which I thought we were having. So I do have other regents in the queue, unless President Pollard, do you have a response that you wanted to make? I want to honor that.
I do find it... I have no objection to providing additional information regarding accreditation. I think that is certainly within my purview and certainly something that should and can be done. I do find it intriguing, and I loved Regent Brooks, your comment about process and due diligence and procedural processes. I'm going to go back and do a better understanding of how this has been handled the other times this has been done here by this body, not the existing body, but as it relates to names of institutions within the system, because perhaps there's something I can and should learn from that. But I also want to be very clear that in no way am I suggesting that the name college doesn't have value and worth. I chose not to respond to that earlier when our student body president mentioned that earlier for two very specific reasons. Those of you who know me know that I've spent 25 years in community colleges. I have a profound and deep and abiding respect for what community colleges do. I'm also a student of higher education. I know how that evolves. I understand why the term college was first used, why it changed, and I also understand Carnegie classifications, that we have some colleges that function as universities and choose to use the name college instead, Boston College is probably the one that comes first of mind. And I also know that university has no connection to size. It is typically representative of the scope of work that it does. And in our case, providing both undergraduate and graduate education is indeed what we do at Nevada State. So it's not meant as a derogatory term to say that for us to accept the term or ask to have the name university in it is that. In fact, it's to clearly differentiate and to create lanes by which we all operate in. But I have no problem providing additional insight around process and due diligence.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Regent Carter, you are next in the queue.
Point of order.
One of our earliest conversations was about branding.
Point of order.
Can you hear me?
We had a motion and a second to table, so we have to discuss that and vote on that before we can continue. Correct?
Correct, but the chair asked for Ms. Pollard's input, and presumably Regent Carter is going to talk about the tabling. That's my presumption.
Okay.
I have no idea what he's talking about. I just know I have a list of regents who want to speak.
Well, yes, ma'am. So right now, with the motion and the second, we're in the debate form on whether or not the motion to table should be approved or denied. You exercise your discretion to allow President Pollard to share her reaction, thoughts, and feelings regarding this motion, and now the region should participate in a germane manner, i.e. relative to the motion of tabling it. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. So we are now, Regent Carter, would you like to speak to tabling the motion?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you.
So I do support the renaming, but with the caveat of, the code changes and putting that stuff in place, you know, the conditional support of our two other institutions here in the South kind of is predicated on some of the stuff that's in that code change and handbook and some of the protections that are in place. So I would definitely support tabling until we figure out what those code changes look like.
Thank you so much. Next in the queue, I have Regent Arascata, and again, we are taking comments on the motion that's before us to table this.
I'll reserve my comments and questions for a further time. I agree with my esteemed colleagues to propose to table this issue.
Thank you. And Regent Vice Chair Carvalho, please.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. I'm in support of this name change. From the beginning, I have said first to President Patterson and then to President Pollard regarding some of the issues that come along with the name change. We've had many discussions regarding this. So I agree with my colleagues that we need to maybe slow down the process a little bit. Maybe I'm just ignorant on exactly what we're talking about when we say tabling. But as Regent Boylan pointed out, the collaboration between UNR and GBC and their slow, deliberate process there that we as a board approved yesterday, I would like to see, instead of tabling this, asking for approval for Nevada State to pursue this name change with a caveat that they come back to us perhaps in December or some later date between now and perhaps July 1st to give us an update on accreditation, the legislature. By then that would, well, not December. December wouldn't work for the legislature, so maybe we'd have to work on a time like that. But I just am concerned that tabling this is putting it aside. And I hear the enthusiasm the encouragement from our external stakeholders. As Regent Brooks pointed out, there's a lot of momentum in Henderson for this, and I don't want to dismiss that because of issues that we find as part of this process. So I'm not sure if this, I'm not sure how to convey, do I, and maybe this is an exercise in futility on my part, but I just think tabling it is at this point a little, I would rather see more actionable items on this than just tabling it right now.
And I appreciate that comment very much, Vice Chair Carvalho. I would actually like to ask Mr. Kilroy to please chime in on your opinion on this, please. Thank you.
Regent Carvalho, thank you so much for bringing up this notion. In some ways, you are correct. So my recommendation would be to Regent Boylan to amend his motion to postpone and then provide a specific date or event, for example, postpone until after the legislature opines on this matter or until after the board reconvenes subsequent to the Nevada State and the system office chancellor having an opportunity to continue due diligence. So those are two possible options, but I think it would be cleanest in order to recommend an amendment whereby it's a postponed to a specific event or a specific time in the future. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Kilroy. For the record, I want to make clear that Regent Brooks made the motion and Regent Geddes seconded the motion. And Regent Geddes, you want to speak to this topic, correct?
And Regent Brooks made the motion, but specifically, I would only want to table it to December so that we could get the answers from Northwest Accreditation and we could get a more comprehensive list of the code changes and just make it time certain for the December meeting. And hopefully by that time, President Pollard could get a BDR introduced because the legislators have the opportunity right now to put them in. Again, it doesn't mean it's going to pass, but I think a lot of those things could be cleared up by December, and I would like a time certain in December for the next discussion.
So, Regent Geddes, are you making a friendly amendment to a recommendation to Regent Brooks?
Yes, if he's willing to accept it. Yes.
If Regent Brooks, if you will accept that to bring it back in December.
Regent Brooks, for the record, thank you, Chair McAdoo. I appreciate that, and I certainly appreciate the amendment that Regent Geddes would like to make. My only concern is that if it's one thing that I've learned in my short time on the board, it's that the process of getting things done takes a lot of time. And I frankly do not know how much time is actually needed for some of these questions to be answered in terms of all of the coordination and the processes that could take place to determine how to present this in the best manner as we move forward for not only the city of Henderson, but the entire state of Nevada. And if it's very realistic that this could come back in December, then I certainly would not oppose to accepting that friendly amendment. But I'm wondering if there's something that can be done so that it comes back in December. But if everything hasn't been fulfilled, then there's the expectation that this may then have to go another 90 days or 180 days until everything really does come together very tightly so that we know exactly the best manner in which we should proceed. So if there's some additional thought in timeline, I am absolutely open to that or a way of getting this to come back in December with the caveat that we may not have all the answers in December. So I'll defer to you, Chair McAdoo, in terms of what an appropriate timeline might be and certainly refer this back to Regent Geddes. If there's something in there that we can work out, I'm amenable to do that. Thank you.
Regent Brooks, I believe that we will have a great deal of information, I would suspect all that we're going to need by December. But we certainly can bring it back to the December board meeting with the information we do have. And again, the regents will be deliberating whether we got what we thought we needed to make an informed decision. So I see that by the friendly amendment requested that yes, it can come back, and I do believe it is possible to get that. The we got a reply from the NWCCU quickly, although it was very close to this date because that's when we asked for it. So I believe that's very possible, and I really do believe that that it would be, I would be supportive of that friendly amendment.
Regent Brooks, again, for the record, thank you, Chair McAdoo. I would want to also get the weigh-in from the Chancellor to determine if this is an appropriate time frame for collaboration between Nevada State College and the System Office.
Yes, please go ahead, Chancellor, Acting Chancellor Urquiaga. I got your last name down, though.
Thank you, Madam. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the Board, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor, to you, Madam Chair, through you to Regent Brooks. Absolutely. You have my commitment, and I am looking at Dr. Pollard, and if she nods at me, you have her commitment that we will have the documents and the information necessary for the posting of the December 1st agenda. And if there is an item that is remaining, we will let the board know and the public well in advance. Does that seem fair?
And I would love the opportunity to clarify what it is we want. And if I've taken notes correctly, so that the Chancellor and I can collaborate with our teams. One, implications for the handbook. Second, more thoughtful response from the accreditor from this, and also any implications, as Regent Geddes raised, regarding the BDR. Those are the three things that I will ensure are delivered in coordination with the Chancellor.
Madam Chair, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor, for the record, request from Regent Carvalho is also information from the U.S. Department of Education.
Madam Chair, may I add something to that?
Yes, please go ahead, Regent Perkins.
Also the financial part of it, financial aid, U.S. Department of Finance, or the financial aid under the DOE.
Okay. All right. So I believe then we have the motion on the floor with the friendly amendment. That is what we're going to be voting on. I just want to make sure everyone's clear. And President Chair, Pollard nodded her head, so she's got her list. And I heard someone my name. Yes.
Sorry, Chair McAdoo. For the record, this is Regent Brooks. I just wanted to make sure that if I didn't want to box anybody in, a fellow regent, the System Office, or Dr. Pollard. And so if there's additional information that needs to be sought during the process of this, then certainly it would be sought at that time. In other words, if there are some unknowns that exist right now in terms of maybe additional things we may have to take a look at, I would like the System Office and the Chancellor and staff to have that opportunity to take a look at these things. So again, I'm very comfortable with the amended motion. I just did not want to box anybody into only four or five items that might be necessary to take a look at. I would like that to be as wide open as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. You want to go? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Acting Chancellor Dale Urquiaga, we've had a side conversation. I just want to be clear. Any information we receive from the U.S. Department and from the accreditor will be shared with the entire board as it becomes available, as well as, of course, with the institution. So we will not hold that and then surprise y'all with it at posting.
And I am going to request that that information go through our special counsel to the board to send out to the board, so that we do not run any risk of an open meeting law violation on anything. It will be sent to us blind copied, and we will not respond to each other. Okay? And all right. So I'm going to call for a roll call vote, please, Ms. Carey.
Regent Moran. Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Regent Tarkanian.
Aye.
Regent Arescada.
Yes.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brooks.
Yes.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Vice Chair Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Aye.
Regent Dubrava.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Chair McAdoo.
Aye.
Regent McMichael.
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you, and thank you, President Pollard, and all of your public comment speakers, and I appreciate really the great amount of passion that you have for Nevada State College as it stands today. Thanks so much.
Madam Chair.
Regent Boylan, I have Regent Arescada in the queue, and then you will be next, okay? Please
yes,
go
ma'am.
Ahead,
Thank you.
Regent Arescada.
I thought we were going to do some discussion on this. Are we done with the discussion?
Yes, I believe we are done with the discussion. I'm so sorry, Regent Arescada. I did not mean to leave you out of the discussion.
No offense taken whatsoever. I'll circle back with President Pollard in the future date.
Okay, and then you can get whatever information you need, and I can put you on the queue for December. How about that? Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Regent Boylan, please.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate that. Just a moment to add a wee bit of levity to the situation. Through you to Council Kilroy. Mr. Kilroy, I know you're new on the board, and Brooks has the last name B, and he's bald, and I have Boylan, and I'm bald, but I'm the good-looking one. He's the one with the muscles, and I'm going to be like him when I grow up, so that might help you. The good-looking one, the muscle guy, that's it. Thank you so much, ma'am, and you're supposed to laugh.
I did laugh. All right. Thank you. All right. So now this is what I would like to do. We have boxed lunches that were prepared to go, but I'm going to ask you to go get one and bring it back and enjoy it while I ask, is Crystal over there? Yeah. While I ask Crystal to prepare to give us the fee waiver report. I really did not want to table that again because we've put that off now. This would be the fourth time if we don't get to hear it today, and I think it's really important for us to get that. So please go get your lunch. She's going to start, and we can listen while we're getting our lunch. Does that work for everybody? And then immediately following that, we're going to take the committee reports. And then we will be dismissed, and we're all very aware that we have to be succinct. All right. Thank you. Ms. Abba, please go ahead. I don't think your mic is on. Thank you.
For the record, Crystal Abba, Executive Vice Chancellor, Chief of Staff, and pinch hitter. I will do my best to get you through this very quickly because I know many of you have planes to catch. But I want to start by saying this is an important topic. And yesterday you heard the Chancellor say that in his short time, he would like to figure out where we can move the needle. And this topic, as you heard under public comment, is an important one. And this is an area where I think we can establish a strategy for sustainability. And so in my presentation today, and there will be a quiz at the end for everyone who is behind me talking, and you can't leave the room unless you get a passing grade. So I will provide for you today some background, and I think this background is absolutely critical, because outside of Regent Geddes, many of you have not lived through this, and I think the more you know about the past, the better that you are able to prepare for the future. And I think many conversations we have had during this and almost every board meeting reflect that. So the extent to which we can understand why these programs were created, how they were created, what authority the legislature has over these programs versus the authority that you have, it will help you in making decisions and determining strategies that will sustain these going forward. Because the populations that many of these waivers support are populations that are critical to our state and populations that we want to make sure succeed in higher education. So I will also provide for everyone the general definition of what is a fee waiver, because oftentimes that term is frankly misused. It is not a form of financial aid. I'm going to explain what that means relative to financial aid. And then I will go through meticulously every fee waiver that we have, including I will talk a little bit about fee waivers that are permissive in statute that have not been adopted. So I'm going to cover everything. And this time period that I'm covering starts in 2003, because 2003 was the first change that really began the domino effect to where we are today. And again, as I go through the presentation, please keep in mind the purpose and effectiveness and affordability of these waivers, because what we want to ultimately come to is a strategy where we can continue these programs as long as we possibly can. So who has the authority to establish fee waiver programs? Well, obviously this board as a constitutional entity, and you have created fee waivers in the past. The senior citizen fee waiver that was eliminated, there was another strange fee waiver for non-matriculated foreign language speakers, and your foster care or foster youth fee waiver. In addition to that, beginning in 2003, the legislature asserted its authority in establishing fee waiver programs. And then this board has occasionally, and actually only on one occasion in the past 20 years, delegated authority to the institutions to waive certain fees under certain circumstances. So very, very narrow band where you delegated that authority to the fee to the institutions. What's important to recognize, we started tracking these costs just in the last 5 years or so, and there has been significant growth in fee waivers. So when you look at the current costs for the last academic year, $3.6 million. 5 years ago, it was $2.5 million. That's a 44.7% increase. Now, put in context what you are waiving on fee waivers versus financial aid. So yesterday, you heard from Mr. Quiroga, he presented financial aid, and the total number for aid distributed for last year was over $650 million. Fee waivers are $3.6 million, so less than half of a percent. So these are really, really tiny, but the growth is phenomenal. So I like to think of these as little seeds, and what we need to do in terms of sustainability is figure out a way that we can grow these programs, but not at a detrimental consequence to the institution. And when you look at this growth rate now, right now, collectively, the fee waivers are smaller than the SSOG program, but the Silver State Opportunity Grant program. But I expect that within a short period of time, within the next 5 years, when you see the trend in the legislature, these programs will likely be larger than the Silver State Opportunity program, which is, again, is a state-funded financial aid program. So historically, this board has taken, and for lack of a better term, a conservative approach to fee waivers. As I indicated, there are cases where in state law it is authorized, and there's one case where it's permissive language and the board adopted it, and I'm going to explain that history, and that's the National Guard fee waiver. And then there are also cases today where there are permissive provisions in state law for fee waivers that this board did not adopt, and that's for veterans in STEM programs and students, homeless students. And of course, then there's the example where this board very recently adopted a fee waiver program under the leadership of Chancellor Tom Riley, who felt very, you will all remember his passion around foster youth. And he created that program, and what separates that program from all the other programs is Laura Orbrist, who is the foster youth ambassador. It is a grant-funded program, and we have created an infrastructure around that program that has been critical to its success, and you're going to see that in those numbers. And then, as I mentioned before, there are two fee waivers, the senior citizen fee waiver and the fee waiver for certain non-matriculated foreign language speakers that were on the books prior to 2003, but they were eliminated during the recession. And don't ask me what the fee waiver is for a non-matriculated foreign language speaker to this day. I don't know what that means. And when it was eliminated, no one else in the system knew what it meant, so we just got rid of it. But the senior citizen fee waiver, everyone knew what that was. We were providing an opportunity for retired individuals and senior citizens to come in and take a course at no cost, and the institution essentially absorbed that cost. So now let's talk a little bit about what is a fee waiver. It is a partial or full release from the requirement of payment of a fee, typically the base registration fee. How you'll see over time, that's been the growth in some of these programs. With the National Guard fee waiver, we started with laboratory fees, and some of them even use the term all other mandatory fees. A fee waiver results in foregone revenue that would not otherwise be collected by the institution. So we don't collect anything. What we do collect, however, is state support. So the weighted student credit hours that are generated from a student who's in a fee waiver, we do get the state support, but we don't get the revenue from the collection of student fees. So is it financial aid? No. No, not really, because financial aid has money that backs it. So everything that Mr. Quiroga talked about yesterday, there's all money behind that, whether it's federal money in the form of Pell Grant, whether it's state money that supports the GGMS or SSOG or NPS or any of those programs, or there are programs where there is a set-aside in the base registration fee that is used to support student access, and that's like the REOA, the Regents Higher Education Opportunity Awards. And fee waivers are not included in the financial aid report because fee waivers are not financial aid, which is why I'm talking to you today to provide you with that history. So now let's start with the National Guard fee waiver. I'm going to, for all of these programs, and I'm going to do the National Guard fee waiver more meticulously, and then I'll speed through the other ones until I get to the last one, which is the Native American fee waiver. I'm going to spend a little bit more time on that. But for each of these, I will talk about how it came about, how it works, and what the costs are. Now, to Regent Perkins' point yesterday on the issue of Mr. Quiroga, who I've now mentioned three times, he referenced fee waivers when he was talking about financial aid. And you asked a good question, which is, can we look at these programs relative to graduation rates? Because I think the intent behind that is judging programs on their outcomes and not necessarily on their intentions. This report today is about the history and how they were created. The piece that's missing from this is evaluating student outcomes. The only thing I'm going to be able to show you here is a little bit of an impact on access, where you see the increase in the use of the fee waivers. What you're not going to see are data regarding persistence rates, graduation rates. However, that is the type of data that we want to collect going forward. And Ms. Davis, who is always 10 feet ahead of me, you asked that question, and she immediately reminded me that the Academic and Student Affairs Department is now in the process of collecting student record level data for fee waivers. So come next spring, we're going to be able to answer your question. I can't answer it now, but I'll be able to answer it next spring. So how did this all start? So again, 2003, there's nothing on the books in state law when it comes to fee waivers. What is on the books in the handbook is the senior citizen and the non-matriculated foreign language speakers. In 2003, the National Guard had a program that they used as an incentive to recruit individuals into the National Guard and to reward active duty members in the National Guard. And that was the National Guard Benefits Program. That program was funded through a state appropriation, and essentially it was a tuition reimbursement program. And what happened was a student would be in the National Guard or they would be a recruit, and they were able to enroll for courses, and there was no limit on the number of courses that they can enroll in. And when they would have to pay the fees up front. And at the end of the semester, if they were still in good standing with the National Guard and had a 2.0, the National Guard reimbursed them. So it was a reimbursement program. But the student fronted those funds. And when the student fronted those funds, that means not only was the institution collecting state support, although then we were under the old funding formula, They also collected the revenue from the student right up front. So that's your traditional model. And again, it was very similar to a grant and aid, but you got it at the end of the semester rather than the beginning. Now, for perspective, the state appropriation in 2003 or pre-2003 was right around $100,000. And you're going to see now that today this program is over, well over $2 million. So that's 25 times bigger than it was before the waiver program. That's how much it's grown, 25 times in 19 years. That's wildfire growth. Okay, so what happened in 2003? And Regent Geddes, I think you were a member of the state legislature in 2003. There was a special session of the state legislature to consider a tax plan sufficient to meet the appropriations and spending measures that were passed during the 2003 session. So we did it backwards then. Basically, they passed the spending package, and then they realized after the fact we don't have enough money. So during a special session, they looked at cuts, and in addition to that, they looked at a tax plan. And when they did that, they passed Assembly Bill 9, which authorized, it did not mandate, it authorized the Board of Regents to waive registration fees and laboratory fees, which is the exact language that's in the statute today, for active members and recruits of the National Guard. And when they did that, they set it up for 2 years. So it had a sunset provision for 2005. And again, it was permissive language, and we adopted language at that time in terms of qualifications that mirrored the reimbursement program. So when you look in the handbook today, it still has the 2.0 and the good standing with the National Guard, because that's what was required for the reimbursement program. So we didn't change anything. We just absorbed the cost. That was the deal that we made with the legislature in 2003. So in 2005... and I don't know how they made this decision, because they didn't look at student learning outcomes, to Regent Perkins' point earlier. They just said, well, look, this really worked. Let's make it permanent. And so we agreed, even though the language remained permissive, we agreed to keep that program on the books. And over time, it has continued to expand. But the important piece to remember there is that we're doing this because we have a commitment with the legislature that stemmed back to that challenge that was faced in terms of the deficit that was left with the tax that was supposed to be filled by the tax plan in 2003. All of the waiver programs are for fall and spring only. The reimbursement program for the National Guard originally covered fall, spring, and summer. However, this board, when it adopted the provisions for the National Guard program, you actually deliberated on the issue of spring, fall, and summer. And I bring that up because as these programs are expanding and as various constituencies have come in saying, we want a waiver program too, during the course of implementation, the question that always comes up is, wait a second, why can't I get my fees waived during summer? Well, this board has been very deliberate in saying that it's spring and fall only. Good, bad, or indifferent, you have said spring and fall only. The other thing to remember is that the legislature retained the National Guard's benefits account for summer. In other words, you absorb the cost, and when I say you, I mean the institutions absorb the cost of the waiver program for fall and spring, and the state picks up the price tag for the summer. That's weird, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. There's an inconsistency there, and it begs the question of our issue of sustainability. If the state is paying for summer for the National Guard now, and we're picking up the cost for spring and fall, it seems like there's an appropriate conversation there in terms of long-term sustainability. We need to go back to a model where there is state support for programs like this. So now I'm going to talk about the expansion. So in 2009, Assembly Bill 188 expanded the program to include children and spouse of a person who was killed in the line of duty as a member of the National Guard. There's another provision that was included in that bill that we asked to put in, and that's the POW MIA waiver, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Then in 2021, so I wouldn't consider the 09 expansion significant, but I do consider the 21 expansion significant because Assembly Bill 156 that was passed in the last session expanded the program to allow active duty members to transfer their benefit to a spouse or child each term of enlistment. So what that means is I'm a member of the National Guard in my first term in the National Guard. I'm using that waiver or maybe I'm not. But each time I re-enlist, I can reassign that benefit to another individual. So if I re-enlist in a second term, I'm going to assign it to my son. If I re-enlist it for a third term, I'm going to assign it to my other child. So you can see how over time that can cause an exacerbation of the costs. Now, the discussion that we had with the legislature as they were provided the history on this, they were looking at a program that was similarly developed in Pennsylvania. The difference between the Pennsylvania program and our program is Pennsylvania gets a state appropriation that supports that. At the time of the discussions in 2001, as the bill was being drafted, we very specifically asked, well, if you're going to model this after Pennsylvania, can we really model it after Pennsylvania? And can we have funds for this? And they essentially said, no, we feel like this is something that NSHE can afford. Because the perception at the legislature is that our pockets are deep. And another key takeaway that I want you all to understand from this is that when you look at the source of revenue for our institutions, there's two major buckets. There's state appropriations and there's student fees. You're not getting a state appropriation for these waivers, so who's picking up the cost? The students. That's going to be on the quiz when we leave. The students are picking up the cost. So that is one of the challenges that we face, because every time we go to the legislature and try to defend ourselves on this and figure out a way that we can make these programs work, the perception is, you've got deep pockets, you can cover this. But the institutions aren't covering it, the students are. And so that's part of the dialogue that I think over time we need to change. So now let's talk about how this particular program works. So who is eligible? And by the way, all of these slides and within the report, there's a table at the end of the report, and it's got columns that are covering each of these subheadings, because I want you to be able to compare them and see the expansion over time. Andrew and I just had this conversation this morning with the faculty senate chairs, but another major takeaway, this will also be on the quiz, is that you start a program like this, and the way the legislature works, you open the door, and then you just keep opening the door wider and wider and wider, and that's what's happening with these. And it's not that they're not sustainable right now, but over time, when you look at the growth, we can't do this forever. So that's why we're having this discussion today. So who is eligible? Active duty members or recruits, the child or spouse of a member killed in the line of duty, and a child or spouse upon reenlistment. Program levels, undergraduate and graduate level programs, they do have to be state supported because, so for example, your executive MBA at UNR, which is self-supporting, you're not going to be able to get a fee waiver for that. But any state supported program is eligible for, and the reason for that is because we want to get the state funding for those credit hours. That's why it's limited to state-supported courses. Professional schools are not eligible, but as you look over time, the waivers that have been recently adopted, there are programs where professional schools are eligible. So again, the door is opening, and it keeps opening. The fees that are waived, the base registration fee, and certain laboratory fees. And there is a definition in the handbook, and I think it says 300 level and below for lab fees. We pulled that directly from the reimbursement form from the pre-2003 reimbursement program. So we modeled it after that, because I've had a question recently of, well, how did you decide on below 300 level? Well, we didn't decide that. That was what was in the reimbursement program, so we honored that then, and we continue to honor that today. As I indicated, it's state-supported courses only, spring and fall, and again, based on the reimbursement program, that it was originally a 2.0 GPA and good standing in the National Guard. So here's the numbers. You can see that over time, the cost has grown, but in terms of the number of recipients, up and down. So the question is, if the numbers have gone down, why is the cost going up? And that's because during this particular time period, there was a 15.5% increase in the base registration fee for all the programs where there was eligibility. And also, there's changes in credit load. Somewhere in there, we had the 15 to finish initiative, so students were taking more credits. So that accounted for part of it, but most of it is the increase in tuition and fees over time. Now, take the $2.7 million that it cost for the last academic year and juxtapose that to what it cost in FY05 when it was state-funded, $104,000. It's grown 25 times in 19 years. Okay, POW MIA. So now I'm going to move faster. So this actually was in the board handbook the same year that the expansion came about in the National Guard under AB1,
88. And we volunteered this. And I remember this because I was sitting in the room in the hearing. When the bill was heard on AB 188, they were discussing the National Guard. And we said, wait, we have this grant and aid program, which, by the way, was funded. And it was funded from the base registration fee. We said, let's throw this in. In hindsight, it's a little kind of a strange thing to, when you look back at it now and you see the growth over time, I'm not so sure that it made sense to take a program that was previously had funding behind it and then say, okay, now we'll absorb the cost. Lesson well learned there. Grant and aid program eliminated when fee waiver was implemented. So yes, when the fee waiver was put in place, we eliminated the grant and aid program. Who's eligible? Children and widower of an individual who is identified as a POW or MIA. Same thing. Notice this is exactly like the National Guard waiver. So undergrad and grad, not professional schools, base registration fee and certain laboratory fees, state-supported courses only, spring and fall, and a 2.0 GPA. Obviously, the good standing in the National Guard doesn't stand, but you see the consistency there. All they did was took one statute, paste and copy for the new POW MIA. And there's no students here. And the reason is because this is a very, very narrow band. And I won't get into the details of the tragic circumstances of these individuals, but you see there has been no activity in this particular program. So then came the foster youth fee waiver. And again, this is one that was established by the Board of Regents and not a result of legislative action. This is different from the other fee waivers in that we have received three grants totaling $1.2 million. It doesn't impact the waiver. What it's enabled us to do is to create an infrastructure that supports the institutions, not only in terms of implementation, but ongoing. And if you haven't gotten an email from Laura, you may be one of the few people who hasn't, because Laura is constantly working with the institutions, working with outside entities, working with foster youth agencies, and creating awareness around this program for this particular population of students. So who's eligible? A student who's in the custody of a child welfare agency after the student was 13 years of age. It's undergraduate and graduate program levels, not professional schools. Same thing, spring and fall only, state-supported courses. We do require that they fill out the FAFSA, and there's no 2.0 GPA, but we want them for continuing eligibility to meet the same federal standards for satisfactory academic progress, which is actually, it's basically the 2.0, but it's different language. The completion of the FAFSA, this is not a last dollar approach. The reason the board required the completion of the FAFSA was because this population faces the challenges that we do. We wanted to make sure that they were going to avail themselves of federal aid, but we didn't want to penalize them and say, well, if you get the federal aid, then you won't get the waiver, which is how certain last dollar scholarship programs work, like the Promise program. So here, look at the growth in terms of cost, 312% in 4 years, and we went from 38 students in the first year to 122 students in the fourth year. The Purple Heart fee waiver. So this came in 2019. This was mandated by Assembly Bill, mandated in Assembly Bill 427. This one differs. So this is when Promise had been implemented, and so they started to take the same concept and apply it to the fee waiver because they wanted to avoid a fiscal note or get that fiscal note down. That's basically, I can't be more candid than that. So how this works is they have to fill out the FAFSA, and whatever isn't covered in terms of federal aid, and in this case, because it's the Purple Heart fee waiver, veterans education benefits, so like the Choice Act and things of that nature, whatever's left over in the base registration fee and all other mandatory fees. So that's a biggie right there. So the base registration fee you're all familiar with as this board approves it, but now it covers all student fees and all special course fees as a category within the handbook. So that means lab fees, pass-through fees, any fee out there it's going to cover. And the other big widening of the door is this is the first fee waiver program that covers professional schools, so law, medical, and dental. So who's eligible? A student who is a veteran of the armed forces who has been awarded a Purple Heart. Again, a narrow band of the population. But what makes this Where this door is wide is with respect to that second bullet, where it's not limited to veterans who were stationed in Nevada. So if you look at, sorry, I'm going to flip through here. I had a note on this. Because it's not limited to veterans who were stationed in Nevada, it means that any veteran who had a Purple Heart, whether you were stationed in Delaware or California or North Dakota, can come here. And because it's all other fees, that means you're waiving non-resident tuition as well. Now, you're going to see these numbers, and they're small, but you see the opportunity here in terms of it growing because it's covering so much more. This is also undergraduate, graduate professional schools, state-supported courses only, fall and spring. There is no GPA requirement or satisfactory academic progress requirement. So at this point, the legislature said, and maybe it was because of the population that they were looking at, but there were no continuing eligibility requirements other than the completion of the FAFSA, so you get that federal aid piece, and you have to provide to the institution a certificate of eligibility for veterans education benefits. And again, it's because those costs come out as they take that last dollar approach. So here's the numbers. And you can see they're small, but you can see the potential. If you have someone who comes in non-resident and goes to a graduate program, or they come in and want to go to law school, and at the graduate level, there isn't a Pell Award. There may be some, I don't even know if there are veterans benefits at the professional level, some. But in general, you can see how the cost absorption by the institution for an individual student could be significant. So now the Native American fee waiver, this is the 21 session. It was mandated under AB 262. It is similar to the Purple Heart waiver in that it is a last dollar approach. It also covers professional schools. And it also covers all other mandatory fees. So I think the one thing with this, when you juxtapose this to free college and you think about the traditional promise program that is last dollar, we've based that on just the base registration fee. Again, this is the base registration fee and all other mandatory fees, which is an incredibly broad definition. So who is eligible? A member of a federally recognized Indian tribe or nation, all or part of which is located within the boundaries of Nevada, or a certified descendant of an enrolled member of an Indian tribe. Now, that second piece appears to make it very broad, but it is not easy. You have to go through, there is a considerable process for, and there's a term they use, blood, I can't remember what the term is. But anyway, you go to the tribes, and there is a process where they will delineate your lineage, and you have to have that in order to be eligible if you're not already a member of the tribe. So if you're a descendant that goes back several generations, and you have to have lived in Nevada for 1 year. Now, the challenge with lived in Nevada for 1 year is the other fee waiver programs, it says that you're designated a resident for tuition purposes based on board policy. So with this, we actually ended up, unintentionally, the legislature cut out some students who would have otherwise been eligible under your policy. So, for example, which allows for residency based on graduation from a Nevada high school. And it is undergraduate and graduate level programs and professional schools. Throughout the implementation process, by the way, we did work very closely with the Nevada Indian Commission. We worked closely with a number of tribes, including the Walker Paiute Nation and other individuals that were associated with the tribes. And it was a positive experience for us because we got their feedback. But through that, it was quite clear that even with among those groups, there was confusion on what was being covered. So the question we got a lot of is summer school. Is it going to cover summer school? They also wanted self-supporting courses, so they were looking at some enrichment courses, and the question was, can I take the knife sharpening class at a community college? No, this is for state-supported programs only. Again, similar in terms of the 2.0 and completing the FAFSA, because it is a last dollar approach, and here are the numbers for the first year. So you can see, if you look at this relative to the foster youth, this one got off to a stronger start, and part of that was is because you had this communication network through the Indian Commission, But what's important about this number, this is actually a fee waiver that makes a lot of sense and why that sustainability strategy is going to be important going forward. Because many of you who have been on the board for some time know that of all populations, the one population that is the lowest in terms of access are Native American students. For fall of 2020, prior to this fee waiver, there were 587 Native students who identified as Native Americans across the system. That's not even 0.000% of our over 100,000 students. So this is an area where we have identified a population where we can provide support, but the question is the issue of sustainability going forward. And the last category is the active duty. So this is that very narrow category where the board has delegated to the institution's authority to waive something other than the base registration fee. And basically what they end up waiving are special course fees, student fees, and other mandatory fees. Again, if you see the footnote, excluding the base registration fee. The only institutions that have used this are CSN and UNLV, and they're focusing on Nellis Air Force Base. So that's where that came about for some of you who have been on the board. UNLV actually came to us and said, we want to make sure that with their other benefits that we waive this so it really makes it more affordable for them. But you can see while the numbers have gone down slightly, again, the cost has gone up, and that's that whole issue also with the increase in tuition and fees. So today we're not asking for this board to take action. This is provided so, again, that you understand the past as you make decisions for the future. The chancellor, most likely at the December meeting, will bring forward a legislative strategy that addresses student services and student support services overall. But there's an opportunity here to discuss the need for a sustainability strategy and really talk to the legislature about providing funding for these programs over time. Madam Chair, can I pass out the pen and paper for the quiz now?
I know it's all about students. Thank you. We passed the test.
You did.
Just saying. Honestly, thank you for that. I think it's really valuable information for us and to have reminders of those frequently because it's hard to keep it all straight, although you managed to do that and you managed to do it in your time limit. It's impressive. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I don't know if there are any questions. I don't see any, so I'm question. Moving on.
Chair McAdoo?
Yes, Joe. Regent Arascott, excuse me.
Not a problem. Crystal Abba, Crystal, on page 12 of your presentation, which I'm going to right now, National Guard waiver program eligibility, who is eligible? Does this go also retroactive? So if you have a recent retiree from the Air Guard of 30 years and is a full bird colonel, does this can it be transferred over to one of their children while going to school at an NSHE system?
For the record, Crystal Abba, no. In order to be the base for eligibility is you have to be a current active member or a recruit. So an individual who is retired from the Guard is not eligible.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the information. We are now going to move to agenda items 20 through 26. Which will be the committee reports, and I would like to take those in one motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion from Regent McMichael in the queue, and I will take a second from Regent Perkins. And are there any questions on any of the committee reports? All the regents have those in their emails. We got the bulk of them yesterday, and we got the two from this morning a bit ago.
No Patrick disclosures?
I do have one.
There we go.
Go for it.
Please. Okay. Pursuant to NRS Chapter 281A, I hereby disclose that I'm currently a graduate student at UNLV in cybersecurity, and my tuition is paid by my employer, Matter Academy East. Because the independence of my judgment of a reasonable person would not be materially affected by my situation, I will vote on this matter.
Thank you for that. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. I vote aye as well. Are there any opposed? All right. The motion passes. Agenda item number 27. Before I go to agenda item number 27, this is really important to me to be able to thank those of you that made this meeting happen, which is every single person in this room, plus many that are no longer in here. But I will name a few. President Helens, the hospitality and your generosity. We can't thank you enough for that. And your campus team and our partners, Mardell Dorset, Eleanor O'Donnell, Trina Castingway, and Brenda Sinicall. And the GBCIV Alberto, I don't know if he's in the room, Alberto Jimenez. GBCIT, Dwayne Hiles. Security, Rick Gruber with the University Police Services. GBC Theater Technician, Don Bartlett. GBC Safety, Security, and Parking, Joe Mickey. Audio Visual, Rick Romero and Claudio Osinaga. Thank you guys so much. SCS, Brian Anzalone, Gar Casal, Bentley Holmes Gull, CC Perialis, Ed Boog, and James Unfried. And catering, we've had some phenomenal meals here. Everybody has continually talked to me about yesterday's chicken and loved it. So I would want to thank them as well. And thank you to each of you for attending. And we will now move to agenda item number 27 for any new business. Do I have any new business from any regents?
Yes, Regent McMichael.
Yes, please go ahead, Regent McMichael.
I would like to propose under new business, looking into whether or not we can accept military retirees with 20 years of honorable service after discharge to receive a waiver in addition to using their GI Bill, if they still have any left, as a supplement.
Okay, thank you for that. Is there any other new business to be brought before us?
Yes, again, this is Regent McMichael.
Okay, please go ahead.
I would like to be able to look into whether or not we can ask the legislature to rescind their restrictions of retired or discharged military police in the recruitment for police in the institutions.
Okay, we've got that recorded. Do you have any others? Do I have any other new business? Thank you. Seeing none, we will move to public comment, agenda item number 28. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
No public comment in Las Vegas.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Is there any public comment in Elko? Seeing no public comment in Elko, I will adjourn the meeting, and I wish you safe travels wherever you're headed home to. Thank you for joining us.